Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
You know, Matt, I haven't slept for 10 days. Because that would just be way too long. Thank you to Mitch Hedberg for that
That's
one.
That's right, yeah.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the graveyard. Thank you for joining us tonight. My name is Adam.
And my name's Matt.
Now, pull up a tombstone or settle into your casket and get comfortable, because this is Graveyard Tales. All right, everybody, here we are again. Matt, how you doing tonight, brother?
I'm doing pretty good, man.
Good, good. So before we get into it, I'll say go over to patreon.com/graveyardtales. Sign up to become a patron. We have multiple different levels that you can sign up for. You can click that link right above my head there and go to Patreon. We have a $1, $5, and $10 level. All the levels get a bonus episode every week. It's a shorter version of a Graveyard Tales style episode, or, you know, we have found an article that pertains to a topic that we would discuss and we talk about that. Something like that. But everybody gets that every week. Then if you move up to our $5, you get that. Plus, you get an ad-free audio and or video version of the episode. And I have to say it like that because if we have a host read ad that we do, we will post both the audio and video on Patreon for you. But if we don't have a host read ad and our host, the podcast host, adds in ads, man, that's a lot of repeating words. If they put in ads that are read by somebody else, I will upload our original ad-free audio for you.
Yeah.
That way you get that. If you want the ad-free video and we don't have an ad that week, it's just the video. But you get that if you move up to the $5 level. Then if you go up to the $10 level, you get all that. Plus you get our second show, Side Quest, which is totally different. It's a different style, different topics than Graveyard Tales. It's basically like you were hanging out with me and Matt.
Yep.
We have eaten nasty jelly beans. We've drank weird sodas. We tried a snack box from around the world. I like to tell Matt tales of people surviving when they shouldn't have survived. Matt likes to do trivia games. So it's just, if you were hanging out with me and Matt, it's the stuff we would talk about.
Yep. And we've got fun, silly trivia tonight.
Yep.
So it's going to be great.
It'll be fun. So go over there, patreon.com/graveyardtales, sign up to become a patron, or if you're watching the video, click that link right up there and it'll take you directly to Patreon. If we have a sponsor for the week, in our show notes will be all the links and the codes and stuff. Go check out our sponsors. It really helps us out. It brings them back to Graveyard Tales. So Matt, on that note, why don't you tell us, what are we talking about tonight, brother?
All right. So tonight, we have a very special guest, a friend of the show and an independent podcast creator, just like Adam and myself. We're going to be talking to Andrew Crabtree, creator of the Void podcast. We had him on a while back talking about season one. Season two has just dropped and he's going to come on and talk to us about season two. We get into a few other, topics, but it's always great having Andrew on. He's such a fantastic guest, and he clicks with Adam and I so well that I think if we had recorded the entire conversation that we had with Andrew when he came on tonight, it'd be a 3-hour episode.
Yep.
But if you haven't already, go check out the Void podcast. It's a fictional serialized podcast. It's very well written by Andrew himself.
Yep.
It's got a whole host of his friends starring as the actors. It's great. So if you missed him the first time, you know, check out this one and then go check out the Void podcast season one and the new drop of season two. So you're really going to enjoy this conversation tonight, Andrew Crabtree.
Let's do it. All right, everybody. So here we are with Andrew Crabtree again. Andrew, it's good to have you back.
Thanks for having me.
It's been a while. For our listeners that didn't catch the first episode with you on it, will you kind of reintroduce yourself and tell us and them what you do?
Sure thing, man. Glad to be back on Graveyard Tales. My name is Andrew. Like you said, I always end every episode of The Void by saying, my name is Andrew Crabtree. I wrote, directed, and edited this episode. So I produce a fiction podcast called The Void. And I think there's some cool tie-ins. That's why, you know, explains why I'm here. Like we kind of approach some similar topics and, you know, paranormal things in the world from a little different venues, right? Like you guys talk about it more off the cuff and I hide behind a script. So, we run a fiction podcast, set in this fictional town of Milton, which is surrounded by this like cursed haunted forest called the Void. All kinds of creepy nastiness therein. I think last time we were here, we talked about the Hat Man and the Mothman among them.
Yep.
And so excited to talk about season two, which came out. I don't know when this is going to release, but it came out as we're recording it last week. So by the time these guys hear it, there'll be several episodes up. And excited to talk to your audience because after we did our season one interview, a few of them reached out or posted comments saying, "Hey, Graveyard Tales sent me." So if that's you and you're listening, I appreciate you.
Very cool. Yeah, we figured there would be some of our listeners who enjoyed your content. I know we do. So yep. I'm glad that they reached out and said, "Hey, be sure to do that for this episode too. If you hadn't already subscribed to The Void and you do after this episode, just reach out and tell Andrew that you saw him on our show." So give us kind of a brief overview, not to give any specifics away because we want people to listen to season two, but we did this with season one. So tell us a brief overview of season two and what's going on and everything there in Milton.
Yeah. So broad strokes, season one of The Void was very, what I would call linear storytelling. Like it was a story that kind of had one path that it was on. And there were some branches off and some other narrators. And we kind of heard what was happening in The Void and back in Milton. But season two is a lot more, it's more of a mixed bag, I would say. And anybody that's read the script has, like, their feedback to me was, "I had no idea what was coming next." I think there's an element of that in season one. But I think, you know, from episode one, like, we kind of foreshadow what's coming. And in season two, it really goes in a lot of directions, some really creepy directions. I hope we get to talk about some of the supernatural new wrinkles in season two. But basically, I think in season two, you can expect a lot more. It's a little more psychological. And so a lot of the darkness, you know, like I said a while ago, like the Void is this forest that is this haunted place, right? Like they call it the Cursed Woods. And certainly there are more tangible entities like the Hat Man and the Mothman and the Shadow Men that exist in the Void. But season two is, you know, like it's the darkness is kind of, the edges are blurring a little bit. And there's a little bit of an element where season one, the darkness and the evil was kind of black and white, right? Like you could identify it. It was on the other side of the fence. In season two, it's a little bit harder to gauge at first what is affected by the Void and what's not.
I noticed, whether you intended to or not, I noticed toward the end of season one that I was starting to have questions about some of the people there in season one. I'm like, they seem like they're not playing by the right rules, if that makes sense.
It does.
So I'm hoping.
I love that you picked up on some answers. Yeah, there's a lot of answers in season two, and all of those things that you picked up on are going to get addressed. And you know, like I said, like the darkness doesn't feel so contained behind a fence in season two.
Now, as I've been listening, I was curious. Now, did you have this idea to progress this story from, like, as you were writing season one, or did it just kind of morph as you came to the end of season one and you were like, we can go this direction and this direction and this direction now? I mean, I imagine the character development works that way,
for sure.
But I'm not a writer. So how do you have, like, season three already brewing in your head or what?
So I will say that season one was the easiest thing for me ever to write, because I may have mentioned this on the first episode I was on, so I won't beat it up. But, like, I literally woke up from a dream in the middle of the night and had season one, like the full arc, 15 episode arc, just in my head, typed it into a note in my phone. And so, like, season one, I feel like told itself. And as season one is releasing and I'm writing season two, it was kind of the first time where I'm like, I get to make some choices here. Like, where does this thing go? Yeah. And so I have seasons, like, obviously season two, and then three and four are now arced out. And I will say that season two, it's going to be 20 episodes. So it's a little bit longer than season one. For the first time, I've started calling some audibles where I wrote the script before we started recording. And now I'm like, hey, let's re-record some parts, because I'm going to take the story a little bit differently. So season one, there was no deviating off the script that was written before we ever recorded our first line of dialogue. Season two, the story's evolving. And and some of that comes from the voice actors, right? Like, it's not just the characters themselves, but some of these voice actors come in that I had planned just to have a one-off character. I'm like, man, you're real good. I need to develop your character more. And so they enter into the arc, and it changes things. I feel like, and maybe this kind of goes back to me talking about the linear nature of season one versus the kind of more unpredictable nature of season two. Maybe that stems from season one was very planned out from the start, and season two has kind of morphed and changed a little bit as we've gotten deeper into it.
You've got some new cast members for season two as well.
We do.
So I know you said a lot of your friends helped you with season one. Did you just have a bunch of friends that were like, we want to be in this too? Why didn't you ask me?
There's definitely a lot of that. Yeah. So season one was entirely like my best friends, like the people that I'm closest to in life. I just had this story and I wanted to tell it. And hey, can you pop into the studio for a couple hours? And I'm fortunate to have a pretty nice studio here in my office. So, like, it works out well. For season two, as soon as this thing starts getting out there and people that maybe were on the fringes of my world, you know, like acquaintances, friends start hitting me up like, hey, if you ever need a character. So that definitely happened. and I'll just say, I don't know if she'll listen to this, so I'll reference her by name. I have a friend named Crystal that's going to be credited in chapter four that comes out. It'll be out when this drops. And she was the one that I specifically said, hey, this is going to be a one-off character. And she came into the studio and immediately was like our best voice actor. And I was like, well, shoot, now I got to write more into your character, because I can't let that go to waste.
Right. Right.
And then I will.
You got to double up like an animated special or something. You're going to be somebody else. Yeah. Now.
I need you to throw your voice a little bit. You got any accents? But then season two is the first character we're introduced to in the prologue of season two is the first character that is not somebody that was originally in my friend group. So we have our first like pseudo celebrity that has joined our cast.
Very cool.
So I don't know if you guys have ever heard of the Bobby Bones Show, but they're they're like a top 150 podcast and nationally syndicated radio show and all that. And so Eddie Garcia, who is a co-host, like an everyday co-host on the Bobby Bones Show, is reading the character of Dan Dan the Weatherman. So he's the first voice That's you hear awesome. In season two.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. That's See, awesome. When I heard his name, I didn't immediately recognize him. But now that you say that, I'm like, oh, okay.
He's another one.
That's pretty cool.
He's another one that was so good. And, you know, when I literally got him on the show by calling in on air on the Bobby Bones Show and asking him, which was kind of a cool experience and a neat story. But he was another one that I was like, dude, this guy's only going to want to do a couple episodes at most. And when I started talking to him, he's like, no, dude, I love this show. I want like write as much in. So he's another one that I literally went back in and changed scripts and wrote more into his character. And I think he's going to have actually a lot bigger role even in season three than he does in season two.
That's cool. Yeah, it makes me laugh because y'all were just saying, can you, you know, throw your voice or do a different accent or whatever? I've always said that, like, Matt and I have done a little bit of voice acting on Friends podcast that they did and all that. And I've always said, look, I got one character. If you need a dumb sounding Texas accent, I got you. Outside that, hey, you don't want me doing my British accent. It doesn't sound right. So,
hey, we can write that character in, man. I'm going to hit you up. You've got the mic. You got the mic. Let's do it.
All right. Sounds good. Sounds good.
Oh my gosh. If you're going to go like Oliver Twist, then Adam's your guy, you know.
All right, Governor.
Hey, we do have our first British voice actor in the season two as well, actually.
Oh, nice. A mega
fan of the Void from the London area reached out and he's like a patron and supports us and everything. And I was like, hey man, like I have this like, it's like just a couple lines that is in our companion podcast. He crushed it. So that kind of opened the door for me to reach out to another one of our fans in Alaska and she voices a kind of a minor character. So it's to me, it's just as fun to do it as Friends as it is to make something, you know, like you guys understand that. Being able to include my friends and my family, I mean, two of my three kids have voiced characters. My wife has read a couple lines, like my dad is the curator, my mom's in the show. Like it's just kind of turned into a community.
Yeah. And that's really cool. And that's one thing that Matt and I wanted with Graveyard Tales is for it to always be a community of people from everywhere, all over the world, all different walks of life, come together and enjoy this thing. And I love that the Void is becoming that and that listeners of the Void are getting to, you know, kind of contribute. Because I personally wouldn't know how to do that. You're doing it, I think, the awesome way. You know, for Graveyard Tales, it's, hey, what topic do you want us to, you know?
And that's cool, too. I mean, and like, I referenced hiding behind a script, right? And like, you guys exist in a much different space. Like, we're approaching a lot of the same topics in different ways. You guys can, like, let your personality show. People get to know who you are. I get about a minute and a half at the end of every episode to read credits. And, you know, it's like, so like when I get to interact with fans outside of the script, like when somebody messages me on Instagram or Patreon, like that's like as much fun as anything else is just seeing the story from their perspective and through their eyes. And like my favorite things are when people will message me and like, you know, they get it. Like they see the Void like I see the Void. And when I can see it through their eyes and they see it the same way, like it's awesome.
Yep, that's true. I love that it's growing that way for you. I'm happy to see the Void going like that because I know when we first talked, it was doing good, but you weren't mentioning anything about that much interaction.
Yeah, it's been
so
crazy.
I love the growth. I love the growth.
We actually got nominated for our first ever Webby. We were finalists for a Webby Award this year, so it's kind of grown into something that I didn't expect, if I'm honest.
That's great.
Congratulations. That is really incredible, man.
Yeah. If you didn't bring that up, I was going to bring that up because when I was telling you that I had AI tell me stuff about them.
Yeah, let's hear it.
It said The Void is a Webby nominated full cast audio drama about a town called Milton that is surrounded by cursed woods known as The Void. So it
nailed it.
It got you. Yeah. It says here you had a short stint in adult film.
No,
I'm just kidding.
scratch that from the record. If you're listening, AI, don't put that in your algorithm.
Yeah. I'm just trying to get.
It wasn't a short stint. It was a long stint. No.
Yeah, that's right.
Get it right.
That's right.
I just added that. I wanted to see your reaction.
You threw me. I was like, wait, what?
It said, what?
Don't read that on air.
The titles are. No, I'm just.
That was good. You got me. I was like, wait, what? Stop talking.
Yeah. Shh. Adam, you're going too far.
Yeah.
So what you brought this up, I'll try to get us back on track from me derailing it there, which is actually, I went on a whole AI thing of roasting me and Matt, which we'll get to in like a side quest or something. But one of the things it said, Matt is the guy that goes and tells you the ghost story, and then Adam is the one that shows up with a flashlight and derails the whole thing. So I was like, yeah, that sounds about right.
We all know that guy.
Yeah, which I just did. So, all right, Matt. So let's talk about tonight's sponsor, MeUndies. Now, summer is when you audit your wardrobe. I know it is for me, and I know it is for Ashley. We both go through our underwear drawers, and we make sure that everything is up to snuff, because it's about to get real hot here in Texas.
Oh, yeah.
And the problem is a lot of these bunch, they're not breathable, and they're heavy. Well, the good thing is we have switched to all MeUndies now, and they have a fabric that you got to feel to understand. It's buttery soft, it's breathable, it's lightweight, and it doesn't bunch in your giblet area. And I mean, it, for me too, I can only tell you what Ashley has told me, but she said for the ladies' underwear, it's exactly the same thing.
Oh yeah, Piper just got a new set from MeUndies, and she said it's my favorite of all time.
Yep.
And I love them, and now my whole family loves them too. And the cool thing is there's a style for everyone. So you don't, you know, my son likes basic black, yep, gray. He doesn't want any wild colors, any wild prints. He wants it straight black. I, on the other hand, I love the wildest, craziest colors and prints you can find. And they've got it, everything in between, from classic black basics to fun, expressive, seasonal prints. MeUndies has a look for everyone. And plus, they come in sizes to extra small to 4XL, which guarantees a flattering cut for every body. And like Adam said, you just can't beat the comfort. MeUndies signature softer than soft, ultramodal fabric is breathable, stretchy, and oh so comfy. Perfect for all day wear, especially in the summertime heat. If you're not happy with your first pair of undies, guess what? It's on MeUndies. More than 30 million pairs have been sold and 90,000 five-star reviews. Women and men and kids everywhere are upgrading their underwear game. So right now, as a listener of Graveyard Tales, you can get up to 50% off your first order plus free shipping at MeUndies.com/graveyard. That's promo code Graveyard, GRAVEYARD.
Right. Get 50% off plus free shipping at MeUndies.com/graveyard and use promo code Graveyard, GRAVEYARD.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
But what are you, you brought this up a minute ago. What are the supernatural topics that you explore in season two? Like you said, you've got the Hat Man and stuff like that in season one. So what are the broad, like, supernatural topics that listeners can expect to encounter in season two?
So I do not ever paint myself as an expert on, you know, you guys are so much more versed in me than in like the paranormal and the supernatural. But I do. And I think, Adam, you brought this up last time we recorded. Like, I do try to do a lot of research on this stuff before I write about it. And I try to understand.
It shows.
Yeah. Thank you. And so it's always been really important to me when I wrote season one of The Void and then continuing on, I want to root the evil of the void in something that is tied to reality. Like we talked off air about comments that people leave and stuff, right? And reviews and how we try not to look at that stuff, but it's yeah. natural to do it, right? Somebody, I think it was on Spotify, left a comment not too long ago that was basically critical of The Void because the monsters or whatever he called it was not original to The Void, right? Like, he's like, oh, well, we've all heard of the Hat Man and the Mothman or whatever. But to me, like, I think it makes it scarier to hone in on phenomena that are rooted in reality, that have hundreds or thousands of eyewitness documentation. You know, like, I want there to be an element of, yeah, I know there aren't actually cursed towns like Milton surrounded, but we exist in a world that maybe it's possible. Like, we've heard these yep. stories. We've heard, like, how many, I mean, you can go on Reddit and find a thousand people that have seen the Hat Man, right? Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to keep that in season two. And so, whereas I think that the Hat Man and the Mothman and Shadow Men from season one, I think they're scary and they're creepy, and like, there's definitely a mysterious element. I went a little harder, I think, with my first supernatural element that I am introducing in season two. The guy that plays the voice actor for Sam, the younger version of me on the show, like, he told me that season two hits harder because of some of these things. But how familiar are you guys with Black Eyed Kids?
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
So season two, yeah. we introduced Black Eyed Kids.
Okay. Yeah. The first story that came out about Black Eyed Kids is not too far from where I currently live.
Abilene, so. Right? Is that the, what's his name? Brian Bethel was the guy that kind of yep. pioneered this, like, wrote an yep. article about it.
Yep.
Yeah, it's creepy to me. Like, all the other stuff is creepy, but when we're talking about kids and like the full black eyes and like, yeah. it's creepy. And so, like, I think that just to kind of keep with the consistency of season one, I was trying to introduce phenomenon in season two that had the same vibe. And by that, I mean, if you've listened to season one of The Void, you know that there's like a sound effect I play every time we introduce the Hat Man. Mm-hmm. And like, we always talk about the Hat Man, like, just inducing dread, right? Like, there's this fear or this dread that people feel before they see him.
Yeah.
And as I kind of researched, okay, what phenomenon do I want to put in season two? I kept coming across Black Eyed Kids for a lot of the same reasons, right? Like, I've read a lot of firsthand accounts of people that have interacted with Black Eyed Kids that have said something to the effect of, I felt them before I saw them, and I felt mm-hmm. dread. And I'm like, okay, well, that sounds familiar. Eventually it became clear. I was like, okay, Black Eyed Kids have to be in season two of The Void.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of that is just this supernatural fear or dread that some of these entities can, like, again, I'll say it again, like, project on you before you see them. Right. And, like, that's scary on its face, but when it's kids, right. And, you know, like, if you research Black Eyed Kids, like, what does everybody say? Right. It's like, let me in. Like, they're trying mm-hmm. to get in your car. They're trying to get in your house. And then the other thing that I think ties to season one is, especially tied to the Mothman specifically, is like this kind of harbinger of doom kind of element, mm-hmm. right? Like, if you research the Mothman stuff very much at all, like, one of the first things you come across is, before the Point Pleasant Bridge collapsed, people saw it perched on top of the bridge. Like,
yep.
people see the Mothman, and then something bad happens afterwards, right? Like, it's almost like yep. a bad omen. And I, a lot of my research on Black Eyed Kids were the same thing, right? People that had let them into their house, you know, died the next day, or their house mm-hmm. caught fire the next day. Or, like, there's always something that, you know, like, if you choose to interact with them, if you choose to let them in, which I think can be a metaphor for evil at large, right? Like, if you choose to let this in, it's going to take root and bad things are going to happen. And I think there's some ties between our villains from season one and this idea of Black Eyed Kids that just tie together really well. It's almost like it takes it to the next level, I feel like.
Yeah. Black Eyed Kids, to me, it, if you look at it, there's a lot of similarities to a lot of other negative or evil paranormal entities, where, like you said, you got to invite them in.
Yep.
I mean, look at the vampires yep. and stuff. Mm-hmm. You've got to let it in. It can't do anything to you until you let it in. And I'm with you on the kids being even creepier. That's always been my thing. When we have kid ghosts, mm-hmm. it feels creepier to me. And I've never, like, pinpointed exactly why, but I think it's because kids are supposed to be, like, they're not,
they're innocent.
Well, sort of. Yeah, they're innocent, but
they're supposed to be.
They're supposed to be, but did you did you have to tell your kid to be greedy and throw a fit when they didn't get what they want? No, they do that naturally. So, I mean, there are some things about kids that are not innocent, but in general, they're not going to intentionally go out and cause harm.
Yeah.
And when they do, and they've got completely black eyes, then it kind of screws with you. And they always say the eyes are the window to the soul. So if that's the case, what is that saying about these entities that are black-eyed kids? You know, that they're black on the inside, you know, just evil.
I think that there's a contrast that makes it super creepy, kind of to piggyback off what you were saying, where it's almost like these kids are representing something that they shouldn't understand, right? Like they are representing a darkness that that they have no business even grasping, let alone embodying.
Yeah.
And it just makes it that much scary. Like, you know, you get somebody that looks like me that's, you know, overcome by darkness. Like, yeah, that dude's been through life. But like when you're talking about like a 7 to 10 year old kid, like they shouldn't have had the life experiences that would allow them to understand how dark that is. You know what I mean?
Right. Right.
As a creative element, I like it. I like bringing in characters that people already know. Like I enjoyed the show Supernatural. I don't know if y'all watched that. Part of the things that I enjoyed was trying to figure out based on the clues what they were dealing with.
Yeah.
Because we've talked and researched about so many different, you know, monsters or spirits or whatever, you know, they start seeing these odd things and I'm like, oh, that's a whatever.
Yeah.
And I did the same thing with the show Lost Girl, which was all about the Fae. And I'm like, oh, that's one of these. That's something they're talking about Kelpies. And then it would go, you know, and so I enjoy that. I think a lot of people do when you bring in something, an element of familiarity, something that they already know about. Yeah. And maybe it's a reimagining, but I mean, I imagine it's not everybody's cup of tea, but I really enjoy that aspect of the show. So, you know, hearing things and now, you know, you're talking about adding the black-eyed kids in there. I think it adds another element to the stories that so many people are familiar with.
I put a tagline at the end of the description on every episode of The Void. And it says something to the effect of, while the characters of The Void may be fictional, you might find yourself confronting your own reality. And to me, like, had I created some fictional monster, it's easy to look at that and say, well, that's not real. It's just a story. Mm. Like, what I really want you to do is see yourself in these characters and in these situations and think, what would I do? And I think that's made easier when some of these villains that we introduce and some of these phenomena and all the supernatural elements, well, I've heard stories about the Black Eyed Kids. I've heard stories about the Hat Man. Like, it just makes it feel more real. And to me, apparently not to everybody, according to Spotify, but according to me, I think it makes it easier to see yourself in the story when you're like, well, pretty strong evidence that there's something to the Hat Man. There's pretty strong evidence that there's something to the Mothman. Like, I think it just allows you to put yourself in the moment in a way that like some fictional horror monster couldn't.
Yep. I agree with you. I think the thing that I took away from season one was it's kind of what you're saying. It's the, if you've got the Hat Man entity in season one, you can look at it as we have heard so many stories of people encountering and interacting with the Hat Man, that this is just somebody else's account with the Hat Man. You know, you don't have to necessarily think of it as a entirely made up fictional storyline. You can think of it as, oh, this is just an addition to all the rest of the stories that somebody has talked about encountering the Hat Man. So that's the way I took it. And you said there's not a town like Milton surrounded by haunted woods. I don't know. I've never been to West Virginia. There might be.
If it was anywhere, brother.
See, there's enough creepy stuff, and I've had friends years ago that came from West Virginia, and what they said sounded like it could have been Milton. So I don't know. It could be out there.
I like that you put that spin on it, because just by you making that parallel, like, you're already seeing it how I want people to see it, right? Like, you're able to put yourself in it and say, it's fictional, but it's not as far-fetched as maybe it seems. And, mm-hmm. you know, the relationships between the characters and the relationships between the characters and the void, like, while maybe not everybody has struggled with their own demons or darknesses in that way, like, it's really representative of some real life struggles that we all have that, you know, like maybe your demon doesn't look like the Hat Man, but I guarantee you've had to battle something, you know?
Right. Right.
One thing I wanted to, that I asked you about, Andrew, was that you've got characters that appear to be now in season two that are going through a period of redemption, you know, that they went through this, the void, and it changed them, but it appears, at least at the beginning of the season, in a positive way. Is that kind of, are you, I don't know. I've always wondered, you know, when you face something that is unknown or evil, it changes you, not always for the better, but this seems like maybe you're going, you know, left of center here.
So anybody that listened to season one knows that the town on the other side of the void, right? When you cross the void, you reach a town called Redemption, right? And like, it was, it's that for a reason, like you've made it through the darkness. And I don't know that I intentionally wrote it as such, but I can't say that I didn't intentionally write it not to be, but like, I've heard a lot of people compare the void to like their battles with depression or addiction. You know, like I had to go through this really intense darkness to find light on the other side. And so I think, on the whole, you're absolutely right. And we see more confident characters. We see more like the weight of living in the shadow of the void is lifted off of their shoulders. But at the same time, as we go deeper into season two, I really wanted to play off this idea that even characters that have found redemption and even characters that have overcome this darkness, like it leaves scars. And so specifically Sam, like our main character, you start to see as season two goes along some chinks in the armor. Like he's not this perfect white knight that, he did this great thing and it did change him. But there are still scars that left that. So Noah, the guy that my friend that voices Sam, like he calls it bad attitude Sam, like that pops out. And you just start to see some of these things where it's like, okay, yeah, like his past has left some marks on him. And what I think is great and what I think is beautiful about the story is that, like, that's real life, right? Like, when we overcome our darknesses, right, like, it does leave scars on us and, like, nobody's perfect. And so, like, even the biggest hero still has, like, flaws in their personality. And, like, I've tried to bring that out in season two as well.
Yeah, I think that brings a very personal and relatable side to the characters. They're not just, you know, these infallible people, and they're set to a specific, well, this is the character of Sam, and this is the character of, and it never changes. Because like you said, we as humans change as we go through life. And I've even said recently when I was talking to my son about some stuff that, like an interaction I had with a complete stranger. And I told him, I said, years ago, I would have jumped all on him about this. And he's like, well, why don't you? It's like, cause it's not worth it. And I don't want to fall back into the dark ages of Adam, you know? So there are those times that you move past and you become a different person. But the first knee jerk reaction is to always fall back to your history. You know, because I can tell you, I certainly thought about reacting the way I would have reacted 20 years ago, but I did not. So having your characters do that and sometimes fall back into something or react because of an experience they've had that makes it very relatable, I think.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And I that's what I hope to kind of get across with it. And, you know, like we talk about Sam specifically in the story, right? Like anybody that listened to season one knows, like, his dad was a jerk, was abusive, was a drug addict. And like growing up, not only in the shadow of the darkness on the other side of the fence in the void, like he also had to deal with the darkness in his own house. And there's just no way that you can come through that unscathed, right? And so like, I think that even, you know, even somebody that's as good a guy as Sam still has to contend, like we're all shaped by our experiences, right? Like, mm-hmm. and like those experiences for him, like they left their mark.
I mean, how hard is it to write characters like that where you know, Morris, for example, you know, he seems to be, you know, so changed by this, but like, how everybody looks at him like, how changed are you?
Yeah.
You know,
no, and go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, how do you approach writing a character like that where you're like, maybe you can't just completely flip him. You've still got to leave something there because it's him. It's a part of him.
And like, that's all of our story, right? Adam just talked about like,
yeah,
the who he was 20 years ago still left a mark on him today. And I think that Sam and Morris specifically are the easiest characters for me to write, because I've told this to people on our director's cut on Patreon, where I kind of talk to cast members. It's like, to me, Sam is meant to represent the best parts of me and Morris is meant to represent the worst parts of me. So when I'm writing those characters, I'm tapping into personal experience. I'm tapping into, you know, who like Morris is, who do I think I would be if it wasn't for the grace of God and people like my wife and my parents? Like if I was left to my own devices, like I'd be Morris. And, mm-hmm. you know, like Sam is the best parts of me. So like those characters to me are, I'm just really trying to represent myself. Now, I can tell you without a shadow of a doubt, the hardest characters for me to write are from the female perspective.
Sure. I can only imagine.
And so we do have long sections of narration that are told from Beth's point of view. So we do have female narration where I'm having to put myself in, as I'm writing these characters, I'm trying to put myself in their positions, right? What decisions would I make if I was that character? I'm really, you know, like when I'm writing, I'm really getting into this mindset. And I rewrote a lot of Beth's narration and dialogue after bouncing some of it off of females in my life that I trust. Like, hey, what do you think of this? And they're like, a woman would never react like this. Okay, I need to rewrite that. And so like, yep. I feel like I've gotten better at putting myself in those characters as I get more familiar with them. But writing from a female perspective as a guy, like it's not the easiest thing, man.
I can only imagine. And Amanda and I were having this conversation just the other night. Cause we listened to audiobooks together. Yeah. You know, we're both listening to the same book and we get into the same authors. And I said something like, you know, I said, female authors seem to be able to write male characters pretty well, at least from my perspective. But when a male author has a female primary character, I was like, man, it's really tough for me to buy into that. I was like, it seems so much harder for a guy to write a believable female character. I mean, you really got to have some talent to be able to do that.
And there's a reason why Beth doesn't appear as the narrator more than she does. Like I like to sprinkle that in, and cause I like for people to see the void from different perspectives. Right. Like, and I'm glad I did, because I went back and forth on, do I have a narrator Beth where we're seeing Beth's point of view? And I ultimately decided to, and I've literally had people reach out on Instagram and Patreon and say something to the effect of, hey, like as a girl, as a woman, like I identify with Beth so much. Thank you for including her perspective. And like, I didn't necessarily intend for that when I wrote it, but that's cool to me. You know, like,
that's incredible.
There's a, you talked about books and fiction. There's a story I heard not too long ago that, so we're all familiar with Harry Potter, right? Like mm-hmm. anybody that lives in our culture has heard that name. I heard a story that Joanne Rowling that writes the Harry Potter books, she goes under the pseudonym J.K. Rowling because her first publisher said, this is told from a male's point of view, no one's going to buy it if it's about a boy and it's written by a lady named Joanne. So literally J.K. Rowling was a way for her to establish herself as a kind of a gender anonymous personality.
I've definitely heard of other authors doing the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, coming up with a either an, a more, androgynous, pseudonym to use so that there's not that connotation of, well, this is a dude writing a female detective or whatever. How are they going to be able to do that? So you go into it with, you know, no initial bias. But yeah, I don't think I've ever heard that about J.K. Rowling, but that's interesting.
I'm pretty sure that there's no K in her name. I'm pretty sure that her name is just Joanne Rowling, no middle name. And they added the K just because it sounded like it could be a guy or a girl.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it makes sense.
I understand it. Cause like I, you know, like if The Void was primarily told from a female's perspective, one, I don't think I could keep up that perspective and that narration across 15 episodes of season one and however many it's like, but I do like being able to represent both sides of, you know, the gender spectrum in terms of like I said, like letting girls identify with a character. And I'm not saying girls can't identify with elements of other characters, but, it's just how, like seeing the world, like I worked really hard at world building, right? Like before I ever wrote a page of the script, I drew maps of Milton. So I never got confused in where somebody was at or where they were going. And I built histories and backstories. And it's like, if I went to all that trouble to build a world, like I want you to see it from multiple perspectives.
Yeah.
And you're doing what, a lot of like Tolkien did.
I haven't written my own language. So I,
that
we're not there yet. We're not there. Right. Come back.
Season four. I see that. But you know, he created the maps and stuff to, so he knew where he was going, and it helped him tell the story of, you know, going through Middle Earth. Well, where are they going to get to Mordor and all this stuff? And so I like that you do that, because it shows not just a dedication to the story, but it shows you're dedicated to getting it accurate and keeping it accurate through every season and story as much as you can, because I'm sure there will have to be some flubbing at some point, you know, but
I don't think there has been yet. And I've got some super fans out there that would call me out on it if I did, but, it's kind of like you said, like we've talked about, like how deeply I went into research on things like the Hat Man. Like I try to include as much detail in the script as I can to make it believable and immersive. So like there's an episode, this is just completely innocuous, but like I talk about a character coming out of Morris's house and turning left. Well, I have to know where Morris's house is in the map of Milton to know if he's turning left or right. And, and I could just casually say, yeah, I turned left out of Morris's house and went to this place. But then the odds of me saying that again in season three and being like, oh, I turned left out of Morris's house and went the opposite direction. Like, it has to be straight in my mind for it to be able to be clearly communicated to the listener.
Yeah. And you got people just wandering all over the town, you know,
everybody's
coming up out of the sewers. You're like, well, how did you get there? Well, I turned left out of Morris's house and now I'm in the sewer.
And Andrew didn't have a map. So here we are.
So Andrew
left his map in the dining room when he was writing and just
spilled coffee on it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So without any spoilers, tell us, you know, what is there something big coming in season two that the listeners can really be excited for? You don't have to give it away, but you know, is it something major going to happen to one or more of the characters? Is there going to be, you know, some huge twist that we can look forward to? What have you got in store for us?
An emphatic yes to all of that. So there's two people that there's three people that I trust to read the script before I finalize it. And it's Noah Hobson, who plays Sam, we have already mentioned. It's my dad, who voices the curator, and Jonah Atkins, who voices the guide. And every one of them that has read season two at the end of it goes, holy crap. Because like, I feel like season one had this kind of epic moment in chapter 14, this final battle. But I think the biggest difference is, one, how we get there is less linear, but two, in the void and in this kind of epic moment in season one, it's really still Sam's story, right? This is this thing that happened to Sam. And in season two, all of the worlds and all of the points of view kind of converge, and the epicness is not just Sam's story. It's kind of this collection, all these people that I've had narrate throughout the journey. They've all seen different parts of Melton at different times. They've seen different parts of the void and redemption at different times. It really collides in a big way in season two. And to your question about the twists and turns and kind of the aha element of it, don't miss episode 10. That'll come out sometime in June. So when I talked about the darkness and the evil of the void, not being so clearly defined and not being so black and white, there's a lot more deception, and the villain and the enemy in season two is a lot more deceptive, and it gets a little bit psychological, and I'm obviously really excited about it.
Well, I know I'm looking forward to it. I've enjoyed where we're going in season two, and Adam and I both enjoyed season one immensely. So, I think if you're a Graveyard Tales listener and maybe you missed Andrew's first appearance on the show, you haven't gone back, go back and catch up with season one of The Void. I promise you're going to enjoy it. If you enjoy the stuff that Adam and I discuss on this show, you're really going to enjoy season one. And then you can jump in. Maybe it'll give you time that there'll be a few more episodes of season two out so you can really hit it full bore. But check it out.
We're doing 10 episodes as what I'm calling season two, part one. And so that's what's airing now. That'll air into June. And then we're going to take a little bit of a mid-season break. Podcast statistics go, I don't know if you guys do, but generally speaking, podcast listeners aren't as active in the summer. And it gives me a chance to get the second half finished. So we'll do 10 episodes in the spring. And then we're going to come back in August or September and do another 10 episodes kind of through that Halloween creepy season. And I will say season two is a little bit more of a slow burn. The first few episodes are kind of establishing this new world, this new normal. But here real soon, it's going to ramp up in a big way. And then when we come back in the fall, it's just going to be all rise.
Yeah.
Nice.
Adam and I are lunatics, so we don't ever take breaks.
Yeah.
I don't know how you do it.
We talked about this the other day, and I was like, Matt, why, when we started, did we say we're going to release an episode every week? Why did that pop into our head?
Actually do it and not renege on that for 9 years.
Yeah. Hey,
mad props to you guys, because we aired, let's see, I'm trying to remember I think the last episode of season one of The Void came out in mid to late November. And then I did some between season content. We did a little Christmas special called Joy to the Void. That was kind of fun and kind of a backstory. And then we went even further back to 1979 and told six episodes called Curated. And that was from the curator's point of view. Those were a lot easier for me to produce because it's more narration heavy. It's less production, less people to get into a studio, a little shorter episodes, but it was a way to kind of string people along. But like, we didn't post full episodes from November to April. And I needed that mental break to be able to write season two, to be able to get in a creative space to arc season three and things like that. So like, for you guys to post every week for 9 years, like I you've got my respect, because I don't think I could do it.
There have been times we weren't 100% sure we could do it.
I think it's mainly stupidity.
That's why
we keep doing it.
That's it.
You know,
it's the best reason though.
Yeah. Yeah.
When you think too much about stuff, that's when you get into trouble.
Oh yeah, for sure. For sure. And, we realized that early on. So that's why now every episode we don't think, we just go and whatever happens, happens.
Hey, and to go 9 years without getting sick of each other and having to take a week's break from each other, like, that's good on you.
Yeah. Well, the truth being is we technically physically do take breaks, we'll go on vacation, stuff like that. Our release schedule doesn't show it because, again, stupid, and we record more than needed sometimes to get a backlog. But
it's the way to do it.
It's we do take the breaks, and you know, we'll go for our mental health. We will go away or just not think about the work for a while. But
I leave next Wednesday to go on a 10-day vacation with my wife, and I've got the next like 5 episodes of The Void and our companion Patreon podcast. Like, they're all preloaded, ready to go. Nobody will know that I was out of the country for 10 days, and like, it'll just keep rolling.
So that's the way to do it.
Yep. So I have a question about upcoming Void seasons, and you can answer or you can leave it just floating out in the ether, but this is going to bring up a topic that Matt mentioned before we hit record. Do you have coming up anything with UFOs or extraterrestrials?
No, but now that you bring it up, I'm like, why don't I? And like, anybody that listened to our first episode together, I shared my own personal, you know, UAP story. So like, this is an element of the supernatural that I'm more acquainted with than I think I wish I was. And I know it's a hot button topic, but at this point, I don't think that we have anything that would categorize as UFO or alien related.
Okay. So then this is the topic Matt brought up. Matt, do you want to ask about the disclosure, or you want me to?
Ooh.
Oh, about whether or not we think that we're actually going to find out anything that we, yeah. So, and this all came up today because Adam sent me this, and I've been seeing it. I don't know if y'all saw this, but there's a photo on X that is like, expect this photo to be in the files that are released, you know, tomorrow or whatever. It is the most absurd thing I've ever seen. It's like some alien face, like photo bombing, you know, this white weird face. And I'm like, are we sure that what we're going to get is not just going to be a bunch of garbage? You know, stuff that either we've already seen, we've already heard, nothing new or earth shattering, or anything that we haven't heard is not going to be so picked over and redacted that everybody's just going to be like, it's going to be the huge letdown. What do y'all think?
Well, let me ask you a question back. Can I answer a question with a question? Is that allowed on Graveyard Tales?
100%. We do it all the time.
What if instead of it being super redacted, what if it's something so crazy we don't believe it, right? Like, my wife and I were talking about this Disclosure stuff. Like, is it a coincidence that a Steven Spielberg fictional film called Disclosure Day is in theaters right now? Like, we're trying to fictionalize, we're trying to marginalize these things. So like, one, we're in a world where I don't know if y'all scroll Instagram like I do. Me and my buddy were talking about this the other day. Like, I don't know what to believe anymore. So I don't believe anything.
Yeah.
And so even if they dropped everything unredacted, would we believe it?
Well, and we've said for years that it seems like Hollywood is fed what they should get us used to.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the government or whoever, some entity goes to Hollywood and says, okay, we need you to start making movies about disclosure and disclosing UFO information, because we're going to do that in 2026. So we need you to start getting, you know, it's got to drop in 2026 or before. And they're like, oh, okay. And then they write these stories. And think about this. The last few years, it seems like the biggest movies to come out were not originals. They were either remakes or renditions of other stories that were already told.
Yeah.
And now we get a Steven Spielberg about Disclosure that is brand new, whatever. Where does that come from?
So I said this about the X-Files 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. I mean, I did. I said, What if we're seeing this show and this show is so popular because they're prepping us for this junk? Okay.
Yeah.
And y'all may not remember. I imagine you do when I bring it up. There were two summers that two summer blockbuster movies came out about the same topic. Okay. There was the year that Dante's Peak and the movie Volcano came out in the same summer, and Deep Impact and Armageddon came out in the same summer. What are the chances that Hollywood is going to produce two major summer movies about the exact same topic, an asteroid hitting the Earth or a volcano completely wiping out a town? Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm like, that. Why would they do that? Why would they go, well, we're not, one studio would go, oh, Did y'all just hear that Warner Brothers is releasing a movie about a volcano wiping out a town? We need to shelve this one put it out in another year or two or whatever. Mm-hmm. Why would they do that? So they would compete with one another, unless somebody was going, there's a really good chance this volcano is going to wipe out this town. You know, if we put movies out about it, we can kind of soften the blow. Or there's an asteroid that may hit us in a few years. We might ought to put out a movie so everybody can kind of be, when we tell them, they don't completely flip out. Mm-hmm. I've always thought that there's got to be an element underneath that. So, you know, movies about alien, I was terrified thinking Independence Day, they're telling us exactly what the hell's going to happen to us.
Well, I think to your point, like, I think that there's an element of that they're trying to normalize things or even almost just like marginalize things. Right. Like Bigfoot, right? Like there are credible sources. There is research like this is something, but it gets dismissed and it gets labeled as fringe or. And so like, I think when you fictionalize things like Disclosure Day, like Independence Day, I think that there's almost an element of like, they're trying to condition us to associate those things with fiction.
Right. Right.
To me, that's what I thought of when I saw that this Disclosure Day was coming out and all of this, you know, these files and this classified stuff is rumored to be coming out. Like, to me, I thought, my first thought was, oh, well, that movie is meant to trivialize this or just condition my brain to associate it with fiction.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I figured they just re-release Close Encounters of the Third Kind in theaters. You know,
why not?
Remaster it, put it in IMAX or something crazy, you know?
Yeah, I'd go.
I would too. Well, I mean,
what's the next one?
They did it with Jaws. Why not? You know?
What was that movie? And it had aliens and humans, and they were in like these slums. And they were robot aliens something.
Oh, yeah. Shoot. What is that movie called?
District 51 or something.
District something.
Yeah. District 9.
District 9. There you go. And yeah, that
we got
real
there.
Close, Matt, with 51. 51 was real close to 9. But I think it's going to be something like that.
Yeah.
And they're going to do something like that and then just prepare us for. If we end up living in some post-apocalyptic world where we're living with robot aliens and everything. So if that happens, if they either remake District 9 or have one similar to it, that's when I'm going to be scared is, oh, great.
Yeah.
They're saying, here's where we're headed, guys. Just be prepared.
I think that is more on the idea of they're already here. You know, they've been here for a really long time. Like I heard a theory today that honestly I haven't heard. And there was two photos of what looked like flesh colored gray aliens with the kind of bulbous head and the weird eyes, but they weren't exactly that. They had human looking eyes and human looking mouths, but Megamind looking heads. And the idea, I guess it was posted by some YouTuber years ago that said there was at some point in the future, there is some humongous disaster and some people go underground and some people manage to survive and live on the surface. And the people underground are the Greys. And the people that live on the surface become the Nordics. They develop this genetic height and everything over time. And they somehow manage to work together to develop time travel and decide to come back to our time for some unknown reason. And I'm like, well, this is new. I haven't heard this one yet. I'm like, if they somehow manage to work in the reptilians, then we've got all the bases covered, you know, for what I think most people that are UFO enthusiasts accept as the common alien races, you know, the Greys, the Nordics, and the reptilians. So, like, well, why not? What if this is really the case? Mm-hmm. Who knows? I think at this point, I'm with you, Andrew. You don't know what to believe, so you kind of don't believe anything because all bets are off. Yeah. You know, we've all been conditioned so much that I think if they told us tomorrow, hey, these are real, you know, we've been communicating with them. We've been reverse engineering that we got to the moon because of them. You know, that's why it only took us, you know, we went from the first flight to the moon in, you know, a few decades, which seems absurd. You know, we went from supercomputers the size of, you know, office buildings to one you can stick in your pocket. And, like, it's all because of them. Everybody like, I knew it. I think that's what people's reaction would be. I knew it all along.
Yeah.
And
I think you're right.
You just move on.
And by the time this drops, we may have already seen some of the disclosure files, as they say, but I don't know. I think it's going to be a mixture of heavily redacted. And then, like you said, Andrew, it's going to be stuff that's just so ridiculous because we've heard stories of them having the disinformation agents on stuff where they go out there and they say one thing that's credible that other people are saying, and then they follow it up with such wacky, wild stuff that it discredits everything they said before. So I think we're going to see a lot of that with these files that come out. They're going to release some stuff that we all know, you know, that we've heard for decades. And then the rest of it is going to be, yeah, well, you know, they got butt cracks on their face and they're actually sideways and that's how they talk. And you're like, okay, this is just no.
That's where I came from. Those are my people.
That's right. That's right.
Sideways butt faces. Yeah.
These people.
Yeah.
They got bad breath. And
yeah. I think the other thing that comes to my mind when I think about the disclosure stuff is, like, what's the ulterior motive? Like, the government has fought so hard for so long to deny the existence of this stuff, and they've gone to great lengths to try to bury it. So if that's been the official position for decades, why now would we release it? Like, what do they, like, I'm sorry, but I'm just skeptical of anybody in power, no matter if that's politics or any avenue of life. So, like, what is there to gain for them to release it now? Yeah. Is it supposed to be a distraction or I don't know. I don't know what this is like, but like, I'm just skeptical of all things, I guess.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And I think rightfully so.
Yep.
I mean, I think if anybody just completely buys into any story they hear now, I'm like, that's foolish.
This is going to sound silly, but I am so much more likely to believe at face value some random stranger I've never met on Reddit giving me their firsthand account of black-eyed kids or the Hat Man than I am the official position of the government, you know?
I'm with you there. I'm 100% with you. We've had so many people over the years send us stories, not just the ones that write stories for us at Christmas, and they're incredible. But people that maybe they don't feel comfortable sharing it in a public forum, even if they're anonymous, and they'll send us emails or they'll text us and say, can I share this story with you guys? And we're like, sure. And it'll blow you away. Uh-huh. And I'm like, it doesn't matter whether Adam and I believe it or not. You can tell that this person experienced something that they don't understand, and it has altered them. Mm-hmm. Whatever it was real to them. It really happened. And those people, you tend to believe, like, what are they gaining out of sharing it with Adam and me? You know, nothing, you know, other than maybe it's cathartic to kind of share it with somebody that's not going to go, are you insane? Because we just won't do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you. You know, I will believe those people that approach us and tell us those stories far more than what I'm going to believe is this is our official stance on really.
Well, yeah. And with AI now, it used to be that show me a picture or I don't believe that you witnessed Bigfoot. Now it's like, if you show me a picture of Bigfoot, I'm less likely to believe it than if you just tell me the story.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
100%. I couldn't get a good picture. I was so shocked by what I saw. I couldn't. Right. I was fumbling with my phone. Yeah. I'd believe that because I think I'd be the same way.
It used to be pics or it didn't happen. Now it's no pics or it didn't happen.
Yeah. I think it's like once a week right now, my mom sends me something from Facebook and she's like, can you believe this? I'm like, no, mom, I can't, because that's AI.
Right.
I have to like sort through that for her because she's scrolling Facebook and just thinking the world's ending tomorrow. And I'm like, mom, that's definitely AI.
Yeah. I'm thankful. My dad, he got a Facebook page for like 2 years because he was doing a Facebook market thing. And then after that was over, then he was like, I'm not touching this anymore. I'm like, thank you. Cause
good for him.
He'd probably do the same thing, you know? And I'll be honest with you, man. If I wasn't doing Graveyard Tales, I might have deleted my social media already as well. But on that note, we just want to thank you again, Andrew, for coming on. And, we hope that every season you'll come back on and tell us about the next season of The Void, because we are fascinated with it. And obviously, it's easy for us to talk to you.
It's a blast. I was looking forward to this all week. Like, I just like hanging out with you guys. I hope your listeners will check it out. I think that anybody that's a fan of yours and obviously is predisposed to believe or question things in the way, like, I think that your fans and our fans have a lot in common. So like, I've definitely sent Void fans to Graveyard Tales and hopefully hopefully those communities enjoy each other, 'cause I think there's a lot of similarities.
Yeah. We could very easily mesh the two communities and you wouldn't be able to tell much of a difference. So
I think the next stage in our friendship is we have to write a fictional podcast about the Nordics and the Greys, because like, I think he was telling that story. I'm like, man, it's a podcast right there.
Yeah. Right. That's true. Write that down and, and trademark it or something. So nobody else takes it.
Yeah.
And do we just say TM, TM, TM and it does it? Or do we actually have to pay money? I probably have to pay money to trademark it, don't we?
I think I was always told, and I think this is absolute bullcrap, I don't know, but I was always told you put it in a self-addressed envelope to yourself and don't open it.
Yeah, we used to call that the poor man's trademark in the 90s.
Yep. Yeah.
When you were writing songs, you'd record it on a cassette and then throw it in the mail
and keep it in there, don't open it.
Yeah, I was like, I don't know how this will work, but you know. But yep, thank you, Andrew, for coming on, and we look forward to many, many more seasons of The Void.
Yeah, me too. Hopefully I don't disappoint. Appreciate you guys, both of you, for listening, and your listeners, hopefully they check it out.
Thanks again to Andrew Crabtree from The Void Podcast for coming on and talking with Adam and I tonight. It's always great. I mean, he is such a fantastic guest, and he has become a good friend of the show.
For sure.
So we always look forward when Andrew's available and can come on and talk to us and not just talk about The Void, but to talk about all the other topics that we tend to get into. Cause
yeah.
he's got a lot of similar stories and viewpoints like we do. Go and check out our Facebook group. It's called The Graveyard. And there we have thousands of members that are sharing personal stories, talking about episodes, giving their opinions, telling dad jokes. It's just a great place to get in and hear some of these stories that we all enjoy and you know, just connecting as a community. Don't forget to check out our website, which is graveyardpodcast.com. And there you can find links to purchase Graveyard Tales merchandise. You can listen to the show, and that is where you can become a patron. And thank you to everyone who has supported the work that Adam and I do over these many, many years now.
Yeah.
We sincerely appreciate it. We can't thank you enough. So until next time, we'll save you a seat in the graveyard.
See you soon.
What's up, fools? Main Event Jey Uso here from the WWE. When it's just me between matches, it's day one-ish. And that means it's Chumba time. With hundreds of casino-style games and new titles arriving weekly, there's always something fresh to try at Chumba Casino. The daily boosts make it even more fun. And have me about to get them all during my downtime. Ready for a fun way to chill out and enjoy a few minutes for yourself? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.